You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website RickAckerman.com. Today, you're speaking to us from where?
Sunny, the Jersey Shore. This is where I grew up, and I'm just enjoying the beach here and all my old friends and just having a good time.
Rick, how would you describe what's happening on the stock markets right now?
Well, it's in wafting mode. It obviously doesn't need any good news to drive it higher. We're in a phase where all news is good news, even like really bad news is good news. And the market, the upward movement has nothing to do with earnings or the prospect of earnings. It's totally decoupled from reality. And I've spent a lot of ink on explaining how stocks can go up, 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 up with almost no input of capital, mainly. And you see this pretty much every single day without fail. They take the high flyers down overnight on almost no volume. There's no, the boys just kind of pull their bids, and they drop the stocks enough so that selling has pretty much dried up by the time they're getting ready for the opening bell. So the opening bell rings and there's really no stocks. The boys lift their offers. So sellers are depleted and the stocks have nowhere to go up, but up. And they get squeezed every single day. And very few shares change hands between the low, the morning low or the overnight low, and wherever they gap it up to in that day. And we've seen with Microsoft, we've seen gaps of as much as $40 in just the blink of an eye. So the market's just a lot of fakery, but just don't get in its way too aggressively.
How do you trade in an atmosphere like that? Just hold and watch things go up?
Well, I don't look for situations or stories or hot stocks or stocks that are in the news or anything like that. I just take certain patterns that are there all day long, and I trade them. So, there's always, as long as stocks are moving, there's always a way to trade it. I have my own method, and, of course, every trader has his method as well. So you just you learn how to leverage moves that don't make any sense. There's no point in thinking rationally about the market and trying to predict where things are going on a basis of logical thinking. It just doesn't work that way. So that's why I put all my faith in a purely technical system.
Gold, is it still hot?
It's still, like, boring me to death, really. It's been in a holding pattern for quite some time, but there's no mistaking the trend. The trend is up. Gold is in a bull market. And sometimes the institutional buyers that are really responsible for the strength in gold, they just kind of back off their bids for a bit and gold will fall. But make no mistake, all these buyers, a lot of them are sovereign buyers. Every sovereign entity on planet Earth is trying to accumulate gold. Not so quietly anymore because the secret's out that they all want it. But I don't pay the occasional weakness in gold much mind. And, of course, silver's out of the picture because it's not even on institutional radar. It's just an industrial metal. And that's why the ratio gold to silver went over 100, which is historically a little bit unusual. But silver eventually will catch up.
How long do you think that'll take?
Well, the gold will have to be perceived at least in the early phases of a mania, but when silver gets a whiff of that, silver will lead the mania because, of course, it's the poor man's metal. a lot cheaper than gold. And there are a lot of people out there hoarding their Morgan silver dollars and silver ingots and silver this and that. And we've seen in the past, really, where you couldn't, the supply of physical was so, it was so spare, it was so tight relative to the demand for physical silver that you had to be a buyer of silver, but somehow the powers that be suppressed silver somewhat. But anyway, silver will eventually come to lead gold higher, and the mania in silver will be more, I think, more spectacular than the one that lies ahead in gold.
AI mania, does that continue?
I have trouble with AI. You know, the sums that are being tossed around, I think Altman said that he was going to put $1 trillion into it eventually, but you've got so many players right now, and they can't all win. They're all very ambitious. I think Musk kind of leads the pack, and he's shown a certain tactical brilliance for being able to, they built a huge, huge computer center in Tennessee, and I think they got it done I think it was 122 days. And this was a big, big project. The supercomputer, the purpose of it is to train Grok, which is Musk's AI model. So everybody and his mother wants to get in the game in a big way, and they're all in it, except maybe for Apple, which got, you know, Apple, as I've mentioned before, could not innovate its way out of a wet paper bag. So, but all the other players, Google, Microsoft, there are many different flavors of AI. And I know from friends of mine who use those different flavors that each has its own kind of specialty. Some are very good at coding. Some are very good at verbal tasks. I've used mostly Microsoft Copilot. But I may sort of ease into Grok because I'm hearing good things about it. But all right, so for all the trillions of bucks that are being thrown at AI, it's interesting that every single one of those dollars is chasing a non-existent return on investment. There's no AI player out there that's actually making money. Nobody has a business model that really works. They're all in the R&D stage, and I don't see how it can work, really, because if you add up all these trillions of dollars and assume that they will be paid for, they will be compensated by consumer spending, I just wonder what it is that we'll all be buying that will make a guy like Altman whole after he's plunked, you know, he's pumped $1 trillion into AI. So, and that's especially striking because the chief thing that's driving AI right now is its ability to put white collar workers out of work. And, so I don't see, you know, you're supposed to follow the money, but I don't know where the money's going to come from to make these vast investments in AI pay off down the road, especially if it's doing is eliminating jobs. And AI might somehow come up with a cure for cancer, but even there, it doesn't begin to pay back the trillions that are being deployed in essentially open-ended AI ventures that don't have a path to profits.
Is AI very much like the dot-com boom we saw back in 2000 that eventually crashed?
Well, it's much more extreme because the dot-com boom, it was partly hardware and it was partly all the cool things you could do on the internet. But the AI story is still nebulous enough that you can imagine AI being pretty much all things to all people. There's nothing that it can't do. And there's unlike the dot-com boom, there are really no limits on the story that's getting pushed by Wall Street to justify unlimited investment in any company that's got that is ostensibly an AI play.
Good. When you say AI is going to put out of work white collar workers, what about people like artists and actors? Are they in danger?
Well, you know, I can see why the Hollywood, the writers fought so hard. They're all going to be eliminated anyway. You know, Disney's always in the vanguard of producing absolute garbage with committees and focus groups telling them what to do. You know, how to write a movie script. So for sure, in the arts, it's really hard to tell how well, it's hard to judge the performance of AI. Like, I'm an English major. I can tell you categorically that AI will never write a good poem, and it will never paint a great painting, and it will never compose great music. I'm a real snob about all of those things. And I know good from bad, but I think that at the edges, really, that yeah, AI is going to paint paintings that people will buy. And as far as the pop music is kind of an interesting case, because there's no question now you don't need people to make music. You can write the music, you can write the lyrics, and you can even get all the instruments that you need from digital sources. So you know, pop music is mostly garbage anyway, and so it's like, who can tell the difference between garbage that's being written by, let's say, some hip-hop artist and or girl band, and something written by a machine? But I think that if the listeners are made aware that a machine composed this music that's getting in toward the top of the Billboard list, their feelings are going to be hurt. They're not going to go for it. They're going to say, it's almost like that time, I think it was Katy Perry, who went out and lip-synced an appearance on Saturday Night Live. And even though they may not be able to tell the difference between the crap that people are writing and the crap that machines are writing, they're going to be pissed off when they find out that some music that a piece of music that's near the top of the charts is completely artificial. So anyway, yeah, we're going to see MTV will become totally driven by AI. I'll use the word creativity in quotes. And there are many other businesses where you're going to have AI doing the script, all the writing, and all the, again, in quotes, creating.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, Netflix is hot. Why?
The geniuses on Wall Street like nothing more than pricing power. And you see that on Shark Tank. You know, whenever you watch Shark Tank and someone comes on there and they say, well, I can make these I sell these things for $137 a piece, and they only cost me 6 cents to make, all the sharks light up. You know, pricing power and good margins is what they're looking for. So Netflix, in case you've been, it takes me an hour now to pick something out of the Netflix lineup that I actually want to watch. So Netflix, it hasn't been completely noticed, really, but they produce a lot of garbage now. Certainly compared to the original, let's say, HBO of 10 years ago. Let's call that the renaissance of television and video entertainment. Netflix produces a lot of crap, but where the stock has benefited most, though, is that Netflix has been able to continue raising its price without losing too many subscribers. And of course, Wall Street likes that. Wall Street is never, it's never a concern to Wall Street, the underlying quality of what's being offered. You know, I can remember, when they were hot for the Subway chain. Subway, they can't even get into Atlantic City where real subs are made. And, but that was, the analysts are never thinking, well, how good are these submarine sandwiches? So the same thing applies to Netflix. It's that no one's asking the question, well, how good are these movies that Netflix is producing? But most of them are absolute dreck, almost unwatchable, and they're sort of losing the ability that they did have to make the movies go viral before anybody found out how bad they were. So that trick is no longer working quite as well. And I think even with Netflix, they're going to reach a threshold not too far from where they are now, where further price increases are going to, it's going to hurt them. More people are going to desert Netflix because it's just not worth it anymore. But they so completely outstream everybody else. Their catalog is much fatter than everybody else's, and that's why people still sign up for Netflix. But even Amazon could become a more competitive model. Amazon has a pretty extensive catalog of movies itself, and they've got a genius algorithm that can figure out which movies it should charge you for and how much, you know. And it turns out that any movie you actually want to watch on Amazon is never free. They got it perfectly figured out which ones the public will pay for. So I think Amazon, just to take one example, could become better at that to offer more of a challenge to Netflix. And who knows, you know, you could get another player in there with a whole different business model that could eat into Netflix a little bit. So I think Netflix, the stock may have made an important top, but I hesitate to get too aggressively in the way of it as far as shorting it. And but the Netflix story may be softening around the edges.
Are palladium and platinum still hot?
Not in my book. I mean, I don't follow either, really. Occasionally I get a request from subscribers for platinum and palladium, but I'm not going to, I have no real expertise there.
Rick, any other areas you find really interesting right now?
Yeah, bonds. You know, the bonds have been screwing with my brain a little bit. You know, I went out with a headline 3 or 4 weeks ago that said, I think bonds have bottomed. And it's hard to draw that conclusion if you look around at the landscape or the financial scape, because when you look at the bonds, which are share, they overlap a bit with the dollar in terms of bullish bearish factors. So in considering Trump is doing everything he can to trash the dollar and our treasuries, it's amazing how well they're holding up. So I think bonds may have turned the corner. If not, they're somewhere near a really important low. And of course, like all good turning points, when the turn actually comes, you can't see the reasons for it. It's never quite that obvious. And so if you're trying to think of reasons why bonds would turn here, it's a couple things. Number one, it's not a question of may, we'll have a recession at some point, and that will bring yields down and push bond prices up. But what what's mainly affecting bonds right now in a bullish way is the perception that the United States, unlike every other country on earth with the exception of Russia, has real leadership. They're just two countries. There's just two people, Trump and Putin, who are perceived as being in charge. Certainly nobody in all of Europe, there's no European leader that is credited with having his head screwed on straight. But Trump, for better or worse, whether you like his shtick or not, the whole world sees Trump as very much in command. And of course, that has drawn a lot of capital into our bond market. So the irony is that even though Trump, in terms of policy, is doing everything possible to trash bonds and the dollar, his success at that is heightening the perception that he really is boss. He's in charge, and of course, the global investors love that. So we're starting to draw a lot of foreign capital, and it's keeping our bonds buoyant.
You mentioned that the U.S. doesn't have enough power for all these AI data centers. Does that mean you're going to be building atomic power plants?
Well, I think, who was it? Maybe Gates was talking about, and I think probably, what's his face, Zuckerschmuck, they were talking about building nuclear power plants or trying to get permission to do that in areas where they want to build some of these giant, these supercomputer centers. So it's an open question, really, whether you're not the U.S. can even produce that much power. Certainly not. It's not going to be wind farms that drive these computer centers. So if everybody's AI plan that's on the drawing board right now came to fruition, there definitely would be a power crunch. We wouldn't be able to generate enough electricity to make all these zillionaire AI players happy. So it's going to be probably at best, it's going to be a bottleneck. The need for power is going to be a crucial problem when so many of these AI plans on a drawing board get into the construction stage. And, you know, with Musk's Tennessee Center, just the cooling tower alone is $80 million. And let's not forget that you need water, too. Anywhere you locate one of these big plants, you need a really good source of water, and even that's not available in a lot of places in the USA. So it's a resource problem, and I think it puts a limit on all the things we're reading about that Wall Street is hyping to drive AI stocks.
Rick, anything else we should be keeping our eyes on?
Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground, Jim. I can't think of anything offhand. I just feel like the stock market is so overdrawn right now, and we're coming into that crucial September-October period where things can go wrong, and of course, because there's a pretty pat scenario, so it really hasn't worked in the last umpteen years, but you never know. We might have a little bit of we might have the October effect this year, but it's certainly been held in abeyance for long enough.
Rick, thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thanks for inviting me on, Jim. It's always a pleasure to connect with your audience.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on X @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com Radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.